So I'd like to invite the grown-ups to go back to your seats. And if the kids will stay up here, I want to do something a little bit different this morning for this sermon. Because I'm very mindful that sometimes when I preach, it can often sound like I'm only talking to the grown-ups. Do any of you ever feel that way? You can be honest. Sometimes I use big words and I talk about things because I get really excited. And so I just want to talk a little bit about this morning. You may have noticed that we read a Bible story this morning that is often shared at Christmas, right? We often talk about Mary, the mother of Jesus, mostly in the Sundays of Advent leading up to Christmas. Well, today is a little bit different. So in the church, there are several what they call principal festivals, which are our big celebration Sundays and big celebration days in the church, like Christmas and Easter and Epiphany and All Saints Sunday. Those are big festivals in the church. There are other days that are called lesser festival days, still important, but not as important and as special as those, because those principal days are related to Jesus's life and his ministry. But the lesser festivals and days look at the lives of people in the communion of saints. Does anybody know what the communion of saints is? Does that term sound familiar? Where do we hear that, or when do we say communion of saints? We say it every Sunday, actually. Calvin's pointing to the baptismal font. That's a big part of it, because in baptism, when we become God's children, we become a part of the communion of saints. The communion of saints is another name for the family of God. And it's not just the family of God here at Holly Grove. It's the family of God throughout all generations. So people who have died and have gone before us, they're part of the communion of saints. We're part of the communion of saints, and people of God who are yet to be born, they are also part of the communion of saints. So it spans across time, it spans across place. So even people like Abraham and Moses and Mary and Hannah, they are members of the communion of saints, just like we are. So you're right, at the baptismal font, that's where we become part of the communion of saints. Also, each Sunday in the Apostles' Creed, we say, I believe in the communion of saints. Does that sound familiar? I believe in the Holy Spirit, the Holy Catholic Church, the communion of saints. We say every Sunday that we believe in the communion of saints because we do believe that God has adopted all of us and that we are all part of that family and that we will forever be a part of that family. Well, another way of thinking about the communion of saints is found in the book of Hebrews. And they talk in there about a cloud of witnesses. So in chapter 11, they're talking about faith and the gift of faith. And they list out several people who have lived out faith in their lives in the Bible, like Noah and Abraham. So they're giving examples of these people who have had great faith and lived that faith out. And then it says this, after all of that, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin that clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. So here they're talking about life in kind of race terms. So life is like a long distance run, like a marathon. And they're saying there are a lot of things that are going to hold closely to us and weigh us down. Like we've got a backpack on us, and they're the weight of our sin and the weight of really hard things, and we just carry it down, and it slows us down, and it keeps us from moving forward in the ways that we should. But what this is saying is, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside the sin and everything that clings to us and weighs us down. And so that cloud of witnesses, I think, is another way of understanding the communion of saints. So if we think about life being like running a race, and there are crowds maybe on either side of us cheering us on, That's the communion of saints, the people who have already gone before us, who know what it's like to live a life of discipleship and to live their lives for Jesus. They know there are going to be times that are really good and times that are really, really hard. And they know what it's like. And so they're there cheering us on. And also in that that cloud of witnesses are all of your Holly Grove members of our family here. They are cheering you on. We cheer one another on. And so in that, as we're talking about the communion of saints and the cloud of witnesses, one of the people in the cloud of witnesses is Mary, the mother of Jesus. Now, Mary wasn't much older than you all when she was carrying Jesus. She was maybe 12, 13, 14 years old, somewhere in there. Can you imagine carrying Jesus in your belly and growing him inside of you when you're that young? But she did, and she did it under some really difficult circumstances, because people didn't believe her that the baby in her was God's son. And so she dealt with people criticizing her and saying really unkind and mean things about her, people not believing the truth that she spoke about. Yes, Calvin. It is kind of hard. Calvin says if there's somebody pregnant with God's son, that's really hard to believe. Absolutely it is. And I think the people around her found it very hard to believe as well. So since I just gave Rosalie this book, Grit and Grace, I thought I would read to you the little bit about Mary. So the author of this book tries to write a little description about what it was like to be a disciple of Jesus from Mary's perspective. And it wasn't just about when Jesus was growing in her and when he was a baby. She was a disciple her whole life long. She raised Jesus as a young child. She watched him as he began his public ministry, which are the stories that we read about in the Bible. She watched when people didn't like what he talked about. She saw that people were disappointed with him, and I think that probably worried her heart. She was afraid what would happen to her son. And she was there when Jesus died. But she was also in the upper room when they were praying. And when Jesus was resurrected, she saw the resurrected Jesus, and she was there and received the Holy Spirit too. So listen to this story from Mary's perspective. My story is one of the most famous ever told. Surely you've heard of it. Surely you know the part about me, Mary, the young girl, the maiden, the virgin from Nazareth. You know, the one who was visited by an angel and was told that she would bear the Son of God. That's me, and that is my crazy story. And whenever I tell it to people, or even refer to it, people ask, "What was it like?" What do you mean, what was it like? I always want to say, what do you think? It was absolutely terrifying in every single way. The angel was terrifying. The very idea that I could be pregnant without even being married was terrifying. The thought of telling my fiancé Joseph, and oh, the thought of telling my parents, it was terrifying. And yet, to be asked to carry the Son of God and to take on this miraculous task, that was magnificent. Surely you know all about what happened after that, the story of Jesus' birth. At Christmas, people tell the story of Joseph and me traveling to Bethlehem to register our family. Everyone talks about me giving birth to my son Jesus in a stable, surrounded by noisy stomping donkeys and sheep covered in hay and stable gook. Children sing of us being visited by shepherds, who were also noisy and stomping and covered in hay and stable gook, now that I think of it, and kings. And even still, even when all people think they know about me, they still ask, what was that like? What can I say? It was scary, yes. Any new mom can tell you that having a baby is scary, but it was also glorious and amazing. A baby, no matter how they come, is a gift, always. And Jesus was the very best gift. Fewer people ask about our years as refugees in Egypt. We were run off by a king who wanted our baby boy dead. Or about when we came back home to Nazareth. But I wish they would ask because it was really hard. Really, really hard. Nobody in my hometown believed the story of the angel's visit to me or my miraculous pregnancy. Everyone assumed I'd made the whole thing up. So I'd hear neighbors and former friends whisper behind my back. Everywhere I went, people would snicker and roll their eyes at me. I'd always shuffle away, little Jesus toddling right beside me, tilting his head at people's cruelty and squeezing my hand just a little bit tighter. How I loved that boy. But as I raised Jesus and his brothers and sisters, the whispers died away. After all, Jesus was such a wonderful boy. Different for sure, but great. Everybody said so. After all, it was hard to miss his kind way with the animals, the way he'd stop to pet the lambs and speak so sweetly over them, the way he tended to injured birds. It was hard not to appreciate the way he included all the neighborhood kids, especially the shy ones or those who had trouble keeping up in the games. And it was hard not to be dazzled by how quickly he learned the scriptures and understood their ancient words well enough to talk with the rabbis. Jesus was at once challenging and respectful in only the way a great student can be. People do ask me about these years. I mean, who doesn't want to know what it was like to raise the Son of God? I suppose my answer is the same as any mother trying to do the best she can. It was hard, and it was good. It was a challenge. It was a thrill. Raising Jesus was a joy that I had never known. But there was something else, something that's harder to talk about. Something certainly no one asks about. Because even on our best, happiest days, I'd worry. I'd worry about loving him as much as I did. I'd worry because I knew that whatever it was that God had sent him to do would be dangerous. It would pierce my soul, as the prophet Simeon had told me back in the temple when Jesus was only 8 days old. But how could sweet little Jesus break my heart? How could he pierce my soul? I couldn't imagine when he was a child. But as he grew and started traveling and teaching, I began to fear the worst. As soon as Jesus began gathering disciples and preaching a message of love, I realized that not everyone liked what he had to say. Not everyone approved of who he healed and when. Not everyone liked the different kind of peace that Jesus offered. Not everyone wanted to be told to love our enemies as well as our neighbors. Not everyone wanted to hear that the poor and the meek among us were the blessed ones. And nobody wanted to hear that we should give more to the poor and worry less about ourselves. But most of all, not everybody wanted to hear Jesus claiming to be the Son of God, the Messiah. Certainly not the religious leaders of our day. But of course, plenty of people did clamor to hear and believe what Jesus said. They were the ones who saw the miracles that he performed, who experienced the great welcome he offered everyone in his presence, who felt the acceptance and mercy in just his mere glances. Others thought he would lead a revolution against the Roman government and that the Jewish people would finally be in charge, the way that God had promised we would. Jesus gained a following, but that only bothered the leaders more and more. And one day, a sword did pierce my very soul, just as the prophet had said. That was the day I heard, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" shouted from the streets. The day I saw Jesus dragged and whipped and beaten. The day I saw my son's broken body and bleeding body dragging that cross toward Golgotha. What was that like, some would ask me. It was the very worst thing you can imagine. I'm not sure that there's any motion for me screaming and crawling after my own son, Jesus, in the street, begging for them to take me instead. I'm not sure there are words for the scene of me collapsing with the other woman at the foot of the cross, of us moaning and weeping below his precious feet, the very feet I'd kissed and cradled the night he was born. What I wouldn't have given to go back, to be holding him again, to be visited by the shepherds. What I wouldn't have given to go back to those nights that I snuggled with him and prayed over him. What I wouldn't have given to giggle again together when we started our prayers with, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." All good Hebrew children prayed these prayers, but not all good Hebrew children were literally praying to their father. And in the moment when Jesus whispered his final words at the cross, he did bring me back. "Father," Jesus said on the cross, "into your hands I commit my spirit." When Jesus died, part of me died too. My son, Emmanuel, God with us, was no longer with me. But you probably also know that my story doesn't end there. And even though during that Sabbath, from that Friday sundown to Saturday sundown, I thought it had, as Jesus was dying, Jesus had asked if God had forsaken him. That's how I felt, forsaken. By God, by the God who had asked me to carry this child. By the God to whom I'd said yes to all those years ago. By the God I loved. But then I remembered those words, my God, why have you forsaken me?" They were so familiar. They were the beginning of a psalm, of a lament, that ended with a great promise, with the words, "He has done it." And I wondered, just what would God do? And then on Sunday morning, Mary Magdalene showed up and was screaming with joy. "I've seen Jesus," she said. "He's alive." God had done it. When Jesus rose from the dead, I did too. God wasn't done with my Jesus, and God wasn't done with me either. So what is it like to be me, the mother of Jesus, the Son of God? It's a blessing. I am blessed. That's the only word I know that captures a life with Jesus. Because it's the only word that somehow takes the wonderful and the terrifying, the joyous and the hard, the heartbreaking and the hope-filled, and turns it into the so, so good, into something and everything worth living for. Thanks be to God. Thanks for staying up here with me. You can all go back to your seats.